Mine's nowhere near compared to y'all's, but like Comic-Con. It was after season two of Game of Thrones had aired, and I stayed up all night to stand in line so I could meet the cast and all that BS. And the first person they have in the line is the redheaded prostitute, which I don't even remember her name because she wasn't a character in the books. But I'm delusional because I'm just so tired, haven't gone to bed. And I walk up, and I'm more thinking about what I'm going to say to Mia. You know, George R. Martin sitting right there, Mia Clark, you know, everyone that, in the cast that you really want to meet. And she's the first person you talk to. And I have nothing to say to her. I'm like, you're a hooker on the show. I don't know what to say to you. And that's really – I walk up to her, and I'm so dead tired. And I just look at her and go like, yeah, you're not in the books, but you play a good hooker. You know, or something like that. And she just looks at me like – thank you. Her actually just kind of looked at me, and what do you say to someone who says you played a good hooker? Yeah, she just kind of was like, she just kind of looked at me and was like, thanks. You know, and then I just put my sheet that they're signing. I just kind of moved it to the right and moved on. It's like, I can't have nothing else to say to you. It is funny though, because like I can always tell at Comic-Con. Well, of course, you nowadays you're more interested in seeing your family, which is understandable. But I remember those first few years when you'd be like sitting in the hall, you know, at Comic-Con somewhere, and you just had it. Like, okay, my energy's spent. I'm tired of dealing with people. I'm tired of dealing with lines. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't approach Jack right now. I can just see it in his face. Like, it's gonna be one of those like, what the fuck you want? Well, it's strange because like, you've only went like 2 or 3 years, but like, you know, I think I've been to 7 or 8, and like now it's crazy because like I'm a seasoned veteran of Comic-Con now, and I go and I immediately know like what lines I can do, what I can't do, like, and I see all these people like doing it wrong, and you want to be like Mr. Mom, you know, when he pulls into the kids' school to drop them off.
Oh, yeah,
and they're like, you're doing it wrong. It's like, you know, like, exactly. You just want to look at these people like, yeah, you're new. It's okay. And what I remember the most, the same, I know you've pointed this out, Jack, too, is that I remember the Heroes fans so arrogantly, you know, it's like their season one had ended. And they're like, Heroes is going to be so much better than Lost ever thought about. You know, it's like, you just want to laugh at them. Well, I was saying, I think going back now, though, would be good if you can get a ticket. That's the difficult part.
Yeah.
It's because, like, I think it peaked in 2014, to me, is the year that the crowd and the craziness peaked. They've had fewer people and fewer huge attractions in the last couple of years. Because I remember getting – me and Jay would get in line for exclusive toys or panels, and you could still do, like, in 2009 and in 2010, you could still do, like, a bunch of them in a row if you wanted to. Right. But then it got – and like, by the time 2013, I remember sitting down the weeks before Comic-Con and planning everything out by minutes, not like, here's a panel I want to go to, here's a panel I want to go to. No, we're like, okay, at this time, you have to be in line to do this. At this time, you have to be in – and I got to do most of it because I had done it that strict for 2013. But by 2014, even that plan didn't work for me anymore. I was like, holy cow, like these fans are just so insane and how many people are fighting to get this one little thing. And then I noticed it in the last couple of years, though, it got a lot easier. But also, I don't really have the dedication I did either. I really wish sometimes I'd get transferred. Because we have another office in the Gaslamp District of San Diego.
How are you not making that happen?
Yeah, well, it's because the LA hub takes care of the majority of the mapping services. And there's one person in San Diego, Gaslamp, that does what we do. And they say it's a totally different kind of vibe down there. Like, because we're real laid back. Like, oh, the map will get done, you know, no big deal. But like that person down there, they're like, oh, you don't want to really want to work with them. Because they're real, like, oh, it's got to be done at this exact moment, and then you're gonna work on this. Look, this is California, man. Like, you know, you gotta, it gets done, man. Kind of like we've been talking about random crap that makes us happy. I learned the other day, or about a week or two now, how to adjust my driving mirrors without having a blind spot, and I did not know this my entire life. And it's like one of those moments where I'm like, oh my God, it's just an epiphany, you know? So this guy was telling me, he's like, okay, so you get in your car, you adjust your rear view mirror the normal way, any way you want. He's like, and then most people on their side mirrors, you usually just turn them towards you to where you just see the little side of your car and that's it.
Right.
This is actually incorrect. It said because like you're at an acute angle, so you're actually narrowing your point of view. So what you do is you lean towards your driver's side mirror.
Seems like a lot of work.
No, but you do it one time and you're good.
Okay.
You lean as far as you can towards your driver's side mirror, but within comfort. Then adjust that mirror out until you see the side of your car. Then lean towards the other way, do the same thing. So your mirrors are actually now obtuse a little bit out, but you'll notice when you're driving, and in LA, it really helps. When you're looking in your rearview mirror and you see a car passing you on the left or right, as soon as they leave your rearview mirror, they will enter your side mirrors. You will see them perfectly in your peripheral vision, and it's brilliant. Anywhere, just try it out. I swear to God, we will get listener email. People try this out about how brilliant it is. It really works.
I can't wait to try it.
Try it. I'm dead serious. I did it, and it takes about a day to adjust to it because it's just weird seeing it that way, but it does work.
All right. I'll give that a try.
You know, the thing is that like it depends on where you're from, because like the South to me is NASCAR rules. That's the way it is. What's it called? You draft the person.
They definitely tailgate, Mets.
Yeah, they tailgate because that's just what you do. The left lane is the fast lane, but there's always some old fucker that's in the left lane going, "I'm driving the speed limit. I'm not getting over." And then so everyone passes like everywhere else. You pass on the right. It's crazy. But like, yeah, you're right about merging and things like that. But then like LA, like especially where I live, I'm right where the 110 meets the 101. Everyone drives in the left side on this particular intersection because that's going to I-10. But no one goes I-10. They're trying to get on the 5 or the 110. And everyone just shoots left. They all like three lanes. It's wide open going to I-10. And then they all just last bit shoot left into the 5 traffic, and it's just a clusterfuck, and you just want to start shooting people.
Say it, Nick. Ever since our episode like a few months back when you gave us that trick about the rear view and the side view mirrors,
yeah,
totally awesome,
doesn't it? Like, and that's what I was actually surprised we didn't get any feedback about that because everyone does it wrong.
Yeah,
like if you do it that way, it works, and you're just like, holy cow, how have I not know about this? So basically, when you know you're doing it right, is if you're looking in your rear view and a car is passing you on the left or right, as soon as that bumper in your rear view mirror starts to leave your rear view mirror's view, it should automatically be in your side mirror. And so you have a perfect mirror. I will say it southernly. Yeah, I could. You mean like no. mirror?
You said that Colleen-ly for that, crying out loud.
That's what it was, yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
I was talking to my doorman the other day about changing car oil, and I said something before we actually got that topic. I said something, and I went oil, and looked at me and goes, "What?" And I went oil, and then I realized he didn't understand what the hell I was saying. I went oil, and he went, "Oh,
I'm sorry, I don't speak your language.
I don't speak speak proper English."
Until the punchline, I didn't know what you were saying either.
Just back from India, where he was at a wedding. Was it his wedding, Nick?
There's definitely a few single ladies that I was like, ooh, hello. But apparently there's some really weird, like our ways of courting are completely opposite. Because like you don't make eye contact with anybody in India. You don't wave at them because it's all considered to be too forward. Because it's all, you know, arranged marriage society. So it's weird. Arranged.
Is the move there? Is it's like get in with the parents so that they arrange the wedding for you? Is that the
right? Yeah, because like even the couple that the wedding I went to, it's a love marriage, which is rare. But even them, like I remember, it's rare for India to have a love marriage. Yeah, and I remember when they came over. When was it? I guess about a year ago. They came over. The parents both came to California to meet each other, and they had to have permission. Like it was one of those, like the parents had to get along first before they were like, oh yeah, you guys can get married.
Really?
So it was really interesting. Yeah. And also they were from two totally different cultures and two totally different religions within India. So it was one of those also where they could see potential problems. Yeah. It ended up being like a really great wedding, very long wedding, very different than what we're used to for sure in our minds of what a wedding is.
So what was the most crazy thing or most different aspect of the wedding that you're like, huh?
Yeah, the most crazy thing is different than the most different thing. But like, I actually thought it was pretty cool. So on the second day during the wedding, there's a big hoopla of like the groom's arrival and the second day
of the wedding.
Yeah. Like
day wedding.
Yeah. Indian weddings are usually about 5 days long. But like, but they shortened this one to 3 days because they just didn't, which is crazy. But on the night of the wedding, which is the second day of this particular one, they both make a big deal about the arrival of the groom and the arrival of the bride. And supposedly during like the 5-day wedding process, the groom is supposed to come on like a chariot. So the apparently it's supposed to be like 2 or 3 kilometer. It's like Mardi Gras, like, because I remember we had like a drum band and horns, and then like a bunch of guys carrying lamps. And then, you know, then it's a horse-drawn carriage with, like, a lot of his family members on top of it. But and so, like, all of his friends and other people are in front of it all, like, dancing and hooplaing and trying to get, like, the crowds up to get everyone involved. Like, it's a celebration of, like, here comes the groom. And, like, it got shortened to, like, 100 yards. And, of course, then they stuck all of us awkward white folks in the front to do all the dancing. And we're all like, what? You want us to dance? It was like, it just constantly felt like it was a joke on me. Like, what? Everyone's looking at me. I'm leading this shindig. The weirdest thing that was the most fun and different, because I've seen weddings where like girls come to like in like a on a horse, and it's just everyone staring at them on a horse. But the weirdest thing to me was, you know, like when we go to a wedding, we all just sit there while the priest says his whole thing, and they say I do, blah blah blah, blah, and they walk down the aisle, and it's all well. So when the wedding starts, after the groom arrives and the bride arrives, they just sit for like 3 hours on these two like chairs, like they're king and queens, and everyone looks at them, and then one at a time people go up and get their photo made with the bride and groom, and then it's they like, just leave.
So wait, so they just sit there and you take pictures for 3 hours? So there's no ceremony yet? This is just like the...
Yeah, so it all started around 6 p.m. and that went on till probably 11
p.m. Is there an open bar during this whole thing?
There's no alcohol, because most Hindus...
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, most Hindus don't drink alcohol.
This whole time you were sober?
The whole time I was sober. I didn't have one. That's right. I did. I had 2 or 3 beers the entire time I was in India. And that was just because I was staying in a hotel that one night, you know, that happened to serve alcohol, because it was a Western kind of theater, hotel. Oh, but just to finish my point about the strangest thing about the wedding is that after the photos are done, everybody just leaves. So they actually don't see them get married.
Really?
Which I thought was weird as hell, because apparently the wedding is actually supposed to be for family and close friends. And so everyone's there really just to get their photos, to say like they were there, you know, to congratulate them. And so we stayed behind and they got married around 2 a.m., which is like they just sit and then they get up and they walk in a circle 6 times and like people throw rose petals at them, things like that. And I didn't understand because I don't speak Hindi. And then after that, they play games, because one of the first things that they do when they go into the wedding is what we would call bridesmaids. They steal the groom's shoes, and it's kind of a way to ensure that he goes through with it. He can't run away. And so after they're married, he has to then play games to get his shoes back. And so then it's like another hour of like, God, I just want to go home. Even though they're extremely long, like all the traditions that they do are really, really nice and intimate. And you actually feel like you're joining a family, and that you, whereas ours are just kind of fake, you know, and they're just been ingrained into our brains for so long of what a wedding is, of just like, okay, you go stand there for 20 seconds. You say, I do, blah, 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 walk down the aisle, blah, blah, blah. Then you drink a lot of beer and you go home, which is fine. But you know, like the first day is the engagement, which is basically the groom's family comes to visit the bride's family, and they do all these rituals of like, we accept you, and prayers for good luck, and then they decorate the bride. And then the bride's family goes to the groom's family's house for lunch, and they do the same thing. And then it's just, then what you think of as a traditional Indian wedding is that night, which is like all the dances, all the henna tattoos, and all the, it's just crazy. That's actually the best part. And then the wedding's more formal, and then the reception's boring as hell. It's just basically, they sit there, get on the throne, and people come and get their photos taken, and then you get fed a lot, and that's it. But it's
a good food. How was the food?
It depends on what you like. Look, we're spoiled. You know, Americans are spoiled in what we eat, as in because we have, you know, crap tons of meat. Most Hindus don't even eat meat. So, and then she was a Jain, which is kind of like, to break it down, it's kind of like being a Quaker of India. They don't eat anything that's grown below the ground except potatoes. Like, so they don't eat garlic or onions or anything like that. So you're really strict on diet. But I mean, it's just nice. Like, the food was, I've known these guys for 3 years. So they introduced me to a lot of Indian cuisine, because I didn't grow up with it in Tennessee at all. I barely knew Mexican cuisine. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, my mom broke after about 2.5 days of it, because she's like, we eat the same crap breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, and
right. You went with your mom. I forgot about that.
Yeah, mom likes to go. Like, I usually, anywhere I go in the world, she wants me to send my itinerary a few months before I leave, and she'll kind of go, I want to go or I don't want to go. And it's nice because she's pretty laid back. It's funny, too, because, like, you know, like we've talked about before, my mom in public puts on this whole fake persona, fake voice, fake everything, and she's not really her. And she can be funny in this persona of hers, but, like, everyone, I get sick of it because all these people are like, your mom is so sweet. She's so nice. I'm like, I don't know who that person is. That's the person who's playing my mom. You know, like, because I know, like, CJ has said that, too. Like, his mom, he thinks his mom's the same as, like, my mom. Because she does. She's like, she her voice completely changes from a normal voice, like we're speaking now, to, like,
maybe your brothers.
Oh, yeah. Mom broke. Like, she was so tired of eating, you know, what I call, like, chunks of mystery meat or mystery something in goop. She's like, thank God for naan, which is like a pita bread for people who don't know what naan is. And so finally we saw McDonald's one day, and she's like, oh, let's go to McDonald's. And I kind of held my tongue because I just want to see her reaction, because McDonald's people, there's no beef in India, period. So yeah. You go to McDonald's in India, it's a big, what the fuck is this? Yeah, they do have chicken nuggets. They're not really a highlight on the menu. Like, you don't see it like a number six or whatever. Like, it's all chicken sandwiches. That's all it is. And it's like, oh, chicken sandwich with cheese.
So why don't they grill, just grill Chick-fil-A?
It's basically a Chick-fil-A, yeah, but it's nowhere near as good. But my favorite thing was not the wedding or anything we did before, like what you're saying, Jay, like Taj Mahal and all that. That was really cool, but it was a really rushed three-day tour before the wedding. When I went to Darjeeling, which is in the – it's a little sliver, people, in northeastern India. It's the only part of India that's got the Himalayas in it, and it was fucking awesome.
I saw your plane picture was fucking cool, too.
Yeah, with them. That was actually – even though I loved, like, going and hiking and seeing the sunrise, seeing the Himalayas come into view and all that, when I got on the plane to leave that place and just, you know, you take off, you're laid back in your seat, and you're like, oh, yeah. And then when the plane leveled out, it's probably somewhere in the 20,000 feet, and I looked to my right above the clouds to see the mountains. I was like, holy shit, like, you don't expect that to, like, if we flew right now, we'd hit those mountains above the clouds. You know, it's just, that was just so weird. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend going, people. It is a culture. I could talk about this for an hour and still not put a good picture in your head of what India is, because you can't describe it. You have to go. Because, like, traffic is insane there. There's no traffic laws. There's no stoplights.
Your taxi driver was driving on the wrong side of the street to go faster. I was like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
You had the strength to actually film it and not be like, fuck.
Oh. my regret about that video, though, is, you know, before I actually pulled what made me pull the camera out to film it was because there was a bus coming about 50 miles an hour right at us with the headlights on, just the entire time, just coming right at me. I'm like, I'm going to die. And then at the last second, he veered right. It was just like, oh, fuck,
just,
man.
Just kidding.
It just worked. It's chaos. There's no other way to describe it. It is chaos. There's no stoplights or stop signs. It's just all intersections are just an interweaving clusterfuck of traffic, and it works, and I don't know how it does. It's not what I would want, even though I'm a libertarian. It's not what I would want traffic wise but it does. Like, I got back to LA, and within seconds I was already thinking, like, look at all the space between these cars. You can totally go faster. You can weave in and out of that. Like, you already get that mindset if you're as pasty white as Jay and I usually are. You know, it's definitely an experience, because you get a lot of stares of, like, and then I every day, I'd probably say about three times a day, I'd get my photo taken with a family. It's so weird. Yeah, like, I asked once again of, like, my guide on that day. I was like, why are people taking my photos? Because you're always just curious, like, is there another reason? And I think with China, as well as a lot of India, it's because they're on vacation too. And to them, it's like, oh, like, look at the people I met on vacation. You know, it's like, oh, these people are different. You know, like, look, I made a friend with a guy who
it's like if you go
from India.
How long were you there for? 10 days?
12 days.
But yeah, I'm glad I never have to pay for a wedding again. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. This was a 3-day wedding, and that's a short wedding. And I was like, how the hell do you people afford this crap? Because the table that I was at, every table had at least a dozen roses in the centerpiece. And I was like, and there was at least 30 tables. I'm like, shit, that's what, over $2,000 right there just in roses for the centerpieces of the dinner. the decorations and how much crap goes into it, and then paying people to drive people and the horses and all the lamps. And I was like, geez, I can't imagine. I mean, to have the amount of stuff in America, it would be easily $100,000. And I just can't imagine.
Okay, mine wasn't that bad.
Well, you know, like the invitations that we send out now for a wedding, like, you know, Mr. Glatfelter and Mrs. McAllister. Yeah. You know, like we'll cordially invite you to, you know, blah, blah. It's usually just now like an envelope with one card in it. And that's it. It's simple. I got a box of chocolates that was all golden inside. And this thing would have cost easily $20. My mom kept it because she wanted to keep it because she thought it was fancy. It's just insane, like how much money and preparation and tradition goes into these Indian weddings. And I just can't imagine forking over the money for it. Did you guys take senior trips when you graduated high school? It was kind of tradition, I guess, where I grew up. You know, because some people go backpacking through Europe, whatever. But all of us as a class, because there's only 80-something of us, not all of us, but I'd say half, went to Cancun, Mexico after we graduated high school. It's just kind of like our big parties to celebrate we graduated high school. You know, there's lots of girls that you graduate high school with that you're always like, oh, man, she was good looking, that you never really date or hook up with. Well, that's all a senior trip is. It's just a massive, like, I'm never going to see you again. You're going to go off to college. I'm going this way. Let's hook up. So this is kind of like a what I picture Cliff doing story in this situation. So this is one girl that I always, basically it's one of those all-inclusive. So you're just shit-faced the entire trip. And, you know, you're just constantly flirting. You're in the pool because, you know, whatever. But so anyways, one night, I'm hammered, and this girl that I always thought was just gorgeous of my senior class, but she never gave me the time of day. We just all of a sudden at the bar start making out. I'm like, this is awesome, you know. And we go back up to my room, we get naked, and we're underneath the sheets, and all of a sudden, because, like, you know, typical, you're 18, and like you have roommates that are in your sharing your hotel room, but two of them know that I'm hooking up with this girl, so they're being a typical guy, like, I'll be respectful, I'll wait a couple hours or whatever. Well, the one guy doesn't get the message. I hear the key card, and I'm like, motherfucker. Door opens up, and we happen to be bedmates. He goes to the bathroom, and I'm in there naked underneath the bed. You know, he does his business, and all of a sudden, he just walks up to us, pulls the sheets out, gets in the bed with us. And I'm looking at him like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, what? This is where I sleep. I was like, not right now. You
know, like, dude, they're rules.
There are rules.
Door means leave it alone.
Yeah, and I was like, you could have at least gotten in the other fucking bed that no one's sleeping in right now. Like, and like, she's just looking at me. We're both drunk anyway, so the fucker just passes out in the bed. I mean,
did you finish?
Oh yeah, yeah. You didn't
lose the moment.
No, I mean, it's one of those moments where you think back on it and you're like, what the fuck are you thinking? Because, I mean, I've got this smoking hot girl where we're in the middle of it, and he just comes in and gets in the bed with us. I doubt he even remembers it, but it's just one of those that it always pops in my mind, like when people talk about, like, it wasn't my first time, but it's one of those moments where was your first time embarrassing? I'm like, well, that wasn't but that one was. You know, just actually later that night, another girl came in with one of my other roommates who was, like, the top five of our class, like the really smart, nerdy girl that went to Vanderbilt, you know, and oh my God, like she came in, I mean, stripped right there on the floor, fully naked, looked at me and just started shaking, you know, like motorboat. I'm like, whoa, the freak came out. Yeah, the last two that I haven't been a bachelor party in shit, probably 6 years or so, because most people get married in their 20s. But the last two that I've really enjoyed were exactly the same way, because I think it became like a trend in Knoxville. Like you rent a chalet up in Pigeon Forge, which is right near the Smoky Mountains. No, it's where Dollywood is. It's a big tourist trap, actually. A lot of people go for their honeymoons there, and it's a big tourist place. But anyway, so you rent these huge wood log cabins out, and we'd go for 3 days. And like the first day we'd do like what you're saying, like go-karts, things like that. The next night we'd do like poker and things, and just a lot of like just typical guy bullshit. But the third day would be just an all-day drinking fest followed by we'd probably get 10 to 15 strippers, and it'd just be clothing optional for the next 5-6 hours. And just, you know, because there's like 3 or 4 hot tubs around these huge places, and it's just a big, not like an orgy or anything, but it's just a big stripper party, and it's great. Mm. And it is what you what kind of what Chris is saying. It's an excuse just to go crazy because you're the first night's kind of like revisit your childhood. So you're doing go-karts and like weird carnival type rides in Pigeon Forge. And then the next night you're going to do more like gambling and college shit. And then the last night's like your last hurrah of like you're going to see as many nude hot women in one night as possible. And then that's the weekend or whatever. And you're just like, this was a fucking badass party, you know? and it's fun. You remember it because it is. It's like it's an event.
I tell you about the first time I ever got pulled over. I got my license when I was 12 because I grew up on a farm. But, you know, you could only drive like on the farm and to and from school. That was really all you could
to and from school?
Yeah.
They're letting you 12-year-olds drive cars and
look, okay, what it's called, you have a farmer's license and you have a hardship license. And so it's basically if you live remote enough to where a school bus cannot come pick you up, then you can apply to get a license and you can drive to school.
At 12?
At 12. But if you can pass the test, yeah, and you're physically capable of driving, then they'll let you do it. But I got pulled over driving through our hometown, which is very small. I think I was doing 65 and a 30. and
wait, you're 12, right?
No, I'm 13 at this point.
Oh, 13. Okay, all right, that makes sense.
The cop, there's a state trooper that pulled me over, and of course, I'm scared to death. I've never been pulled over, never dealt with the cops before. And he goes, son, he goes, you know how fast you're going? I said, nope. And he goes, you're going over 30 miles an hour faster than what the speed limit is. Which is, you know, and I was like,
you just passed three tractors.
Yeah. And then he looks at my license, and this is such a small town, West Tennessee, good old boy thing, which it never hit me until I got to college that this didn't happen all over the country. But he looks at my license, and he goes, you Greg's boy?
I went, yeah.
And I went, yeah. And he goes, you're just like your daddy. You're never going to learn. And he let me go. I was like, yeah, all right.
All right, dad.
Yeah.
All right.
Dad has a lead foot and is famous for it as well.
Never going to learn.
But, that's I mean, you ask people, you can ask Jessica from Wisconsin. Yeah, from Canada. She's technically from Canada. I will drive every time you're in the car with me, probably 20 miles an hour or more faster than the speed limit. But you'll never be scared 1 minute because I'm concentrated the entire time. Okay, I'm sitting there, like, breezing through the Smoky Mountains with my thumb on the steering wheel. And she's over here going, look how pretty it is. I'm like, the last time I got pulled over, which was, last March. Yeah, so about a year ago. In Tennessee, I have a gun carrying permit, which I never carry my gun. I just have it because I have it. Anyway, the cop pulls me over, and we're required to show our license and our gun carrying license, which looks just like a license, but I got a big red patch on it, just to inform the officer that there could be a gun in the car. He gets up to my window, and he goes, where's your gun? And I was like, I don't carry it with me. He looks at me and goes, why not? I was like, okay, I'm getting yelled at by the cop for not carrying a gun. For the last, two or three years now, where it seems like every cop is shooting somebody for having a gun. I'm like, I don't want to have a gun.
Nick, what did you do this weekend?
This weekend, I got a Lego knockoff from China. Nick. When I moved to California 3 years ago, I didn't have anything to do for the first few months of grad school. So I went to the Lego store because it was like a few blocks from my house. And I started buying these collector sets, which are these buildings. Jay has them too. There's the very first two I never got because they were made in 2007 and they're around anywhere from $1,300 to $2,000 now to buy
what?
It.
What?
And I'm not going to spend that kind of money on a freaking piece of plastic.
When did they come out?
They put out one every year and it's a building. This year's building, it comes out in January of every year. This one is it's actually our big one because it's usually it's just one cube of 32 dots by 32 blocks. This one it's a one and a half, and it's three stores, like a flower shop, a bakery, and a gardener or something.
So are they all connected like year over year?
Yeah, like you can put them all together and build a city. Like
that's kind of cool.
You know, they have, and that's what I like about them. Well, the first two I missed. And the first one was called the Cafe Corner, which looks like it's a hotel. And yeah, it's a hotel and a cafe. The second one is called the Green Grocer. It's a little grocery store. So I don't have them, but I was on eBay the day trying to find the Cafe Corner. And I'm not paying $1,300 for a Lego. And I happened to find one that's made in China. It's the exact same copy for $80. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it, see if the knockoff is any good.
I was reading the other day that Legos are actually a better investment than gold.
They are. They are. I read that too, like about a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're holding their value because the first set I bought, which was the third one they put out, which is the Fire Station, they stopped making it, I think, in December 2013. And it was $110, I think, when it was brand new. And now it's over $500.
Jesus Christ. For plastic.
Well, like the ones that I really like, but I don't want to buy, like they had the sand crawler from episode 4. The Jawa sign crawler, but it's to scale. It's so that you can actually fit all the minifigures inside of it.
No,
but
that's cool.
It's $350. You know, it's like I like it, but I don't want. I mean, it's a big Lego.
So now you're telling me this stuff is worth like $500-$700.
Oh yeah.
Next time I go over at his house and he goes out, I could just maybe steal his Legos.
If you want to steal the creator, like the buildings that are in his house in the lower level of Jay's house on the above the fireplace, or wherever the shelf there, go and get those. But you also need to find the box because the box is also what makes it worth.
Oh, I'm sure he still has the money. Box. And I can probably find the box.
Because you can't just sell the Lego. You have to sell it with the box, and then you'll get your money. Like, oh my God, like, you know, like Jay and I at Comic-Con used to stand in line for the Hasbro stuff all the time. Yeah, it's worth money.
I've seen you geeks there.
Yeah. But like the ones that are actually worth the most are the Lego exclusives, because they'll make out two little sets every year and they only have a limited edition, and those things will go for $500-$600 for just a little bitty set. There's one minifigure called Gold Man that came out I think 8 years ago, and it's worth over $1,000 because it's solid gold. It's a little minifigure of gold. It's like, you know, those living statues that people see in the park. They figured it out because, like, if you look up like the ones from the 80s and the 90s, like some are worth money and some aren't worth anything. And then, but like since like 2002 or whenever they revamped, kind of like how Apple did, like all the ones that are since then, because they only make them for like a year or two and then that's it. And they don't make them again. And so they're worth, especially like these collector series, because people want the whole, since the beginning, they want every single set because they want to build the city. And so they'll pay obscene amounts to get every single set. Yeah, Tim actually read this one to me. It's a good and valid question. I'm glad you wrote about it. I built the Cafe Corner module from Lippin, which is a Chinese knockoff of Legos. The pieces basically feel just like Lego pieces. There is a little, the bigger the pieces, the more it feels a little bit more plasticky, because the Legos have like a smooth feel to them. But I only had one piece of the 2,000 something pieces that didn't quite fit. And I just, all I did was I removed it and then replaced it with another exact piece, and then it fit just fine. And then that one fit. So I had no problems putting it together. It looks exactly like a Lego. The only thing is it doesn't have Lego written on the pieces. They're just smooth on the little knobs. The only difference between the Cafe Corner Lego and the Cafe Corner Lippin is they're in the windows, black bars. In the Lego version, they're diagonal crossbars, whereas in the Chinese version, they're horizontal and vertical. But other than that, it's the exact same copy.
Is this illegal? Can you be sued? Can you be arrested for buying illegal Legos?
I don't think so. It's a company out of China, and China doesn't give a shit. I know that Lego is pursuing a lawsuit against Lippin, but like I said, it's China. China does not care. You know, if you win the lawsuit, they'll just pop up another company and make them again.
But I'm saying, like, if you bought it knowing it was illegal, could you face charges?
I don't know. I don't think so. I went ahead and ordered another one because there's two modules I don't own, which is the Cafe Corner one I bought, and there's the Green Grocer, which is the second one. I ordered it basically the next day because it was the Cafe Corner was such a good build. I was like, oh, I'll do it.
Does it come unmarked with a brown paper bag? Just
yeah. It comes in, like, they don't give you the box, which I guess just for cheaper shipping. Like, they just put it in a normal box and then it's jammed all the plastic bags in there. Oh, I'll tell you this. So, whereas in Lego, pieces come in numbered plastic bags. These Chinese ones do not. Like with Lego, though, you would go like, okay, here's all the number one bags, and you'd like open them up and put them in like dishes or something. Don't do that with the Lippin ones. You just open up the bags and all of them, open them all up and just leave them in that way, because they have them organized by type of Lego versus order. And so it's just best to keep them in the bags and just pull them out as you need them. I learned that the hard way. I know there's another one. What was it? Oh, yeah, because like I remember when the Minions came out, the Lego's competitor got that contract instead of Lego. And so I remember buying all the Minion Mega Blocks or whatever there are for my nephew, who really liked the Minions. And they're not as good as, like, I mean, Lego is the best. But, you know, if I can spend $80 to get a modular from China that looks exactly like a Lego versus paying $1,400 for it, And just because it's an actual Lego, I'd rather pay the $80. But that's me. There's some people out there that was like, no, I want the real thing.
Hey, Nick, someone told me to ask you about pickle juice.
Oh, that's nothing special. It's nothing. It's just because, like, it's a remedy and it works. It's for people like me who can drink a shit ton of beer or liquor. And what you do is that when you come home at night, you just get you, you know, 6 ounces of pickle juice and drink it. And
how do you not hurl after drinking that? So that's supposed to keep you from getting a hangover?
It does, because the vinegar, one, because it's a lot of salt in it, and so it's kind of like Gatorade. Like, you know, it keeps the water inside.
Gatorade has some taste to it.
The vinegar also helps keep you hydrated. People out there listening, though, like, try. I know it depends. If you like pickles and you can handle pickle juice, but when you're drunk and you come home, if you've got your wits enough about you to where you know you've had too much and you know you're going to wake up with a hangover, just drink some pickle juice and you'll wake up just fine in the morning. And you're like, thank God I did
that. So there's nothing else? There's no other remedies?
That's just the best one. You know, I mean, I'm sure if you looked up other things, you could find something. But
so if you're drinking some moonshine.
The thing is that you don't drink a lot of moonshine anyway. If it's really good, illegal moonshine, you only need about 4 shots of that and you're already on the floor anyway.
You said the pickle juice. Now, what happens if you came home after a binge and you just ate a bunch of pickles? Would that do the same thing?
Well, the thing is that you're really drinking it for the vinegar, not, and it's because it neutralizes that alcohol that's in your stomach.
Right.
So like, eating the pickle would be good, as in like it's something sitting on your stomach, but there's not going to be enough of the vinegar in the pickle.
Can you drink the pickle juice first before you start drinking?
Actually, yeah, I think you can.
Do they have drinks that are just, say, you want a pickle juice and vodka? Do they have that?
I'm looking it up now.
Do they have drinks that are pickle juice so it like neutralizes the drink as you're drinking it?
Well, it's like dirty martinis, which are just all juice and vodka.
That's not pickles.
I know, but I'm saying it kind of is the same thing.
I don't like olives.
Well, like, I was getting asked this question earlier today. That's why I'm assuming the same person asked you to ask me this. You can do it either way. Like, you can, I've always drank it after I've been drinking, but you can drink it before, and it's supposed to help you not get dehydrated while you're out drinking.
Now, do you have pickle juice in your refrigerator right now?
Yeah, but there's pickles, though, in the jars.
Oh, pickles. You know? So what do you do? Just empty out the juice with the pickles in it?
I get those really big jars. You know,
the Costco jars of pickles.
Yeah. And so, you know, after you've eaten like half the jar, you've got like a crap ton of the juice anyway. So you just use it and then throw it away. I mean, it's not like I would go out on benders every night and need it, mass quantities of pickle juice. I don't think anyone else does this except me. I mean, I'm glad that but if you look it up on the line, people have know that though. But I've been doing that for years just because found it worked.
You've never had a hangover?
Oh, I've had hangovers. Yeah. No, it's usually because like I was out somewhere and I was spending the night with some friends, or I passed out before I got home and never drank any. But yeah, I mean, I've been hungover maybe 4 or 5 times in my life, but I can drink a lot.
Did you have a pickle today, Nick?
I did. I think I had 2.
Whoa, you're going crazy now.
I get those white Clausens. I like those, and then I get the Vlasics, the green ones.
So you're an expert on pickles, Nick. I mean,
I've been eating them my mom.
Did you ever make pickles? Did you ever pickles, whatever they call it?
Both my great aunts did. Like I said, you know, like, for people out there, you know, I grew up on a farm, so we made a lot of our own things. And yeah, my great aunts, both of them, they lived maybe 4 miles down the road, and they always made pickles. I ate homemade pickles.
Homemade pickles better than store-bought pickles?
They're very different. They're totally different tastes.
But which is better?
That's a really hard decision. It's kind of like saying, you know, like, what do you like better, like filet mignon or prime rib?
Well, depends on where you're getting it.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Like, sometimes homemade pickles are really good. Sometimes they're crap. And then store-boughts are consistent. Yeah, it's the same as like my other great aunt. She always made she died, unfortunately. But like, she made really great corn, like homemade corn. She'd make it, put it in mason jars, and had all these spices and butter blend inside the jar, and then she'd let it sit, and you would take out of the jar for like 6 or 7 months. Greatest daggum corn you ever had in your life. You know, I'd like to get that one feedback, you know, on the iTunes. Like, these guys were great until like this one episode where they were just talking about pickles the entire time.